Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 12, Birth of Emperor Parikshit, Verses 1 to 36. Shonaka uvacha ashvatam nopasarshistena brahma-shushnur-tejasa uttarayahato garbha ishena jivitapuna. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The sage Shonaka said, "The womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. Mukam karati vachalam pangam lankayate girim yakripam tamaham vande shi gurum dinatarnam. Om agyana timarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshir militam yena tasmai shi gurve namaha." Before I begin speaking, I would also like to offer my obeisances to Burijan Prabhu, who is speaking very wonderfully the pastimes of Lord Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam. We have heard from Burijan Prabhu the story of the renunciation of the Pandavas, how they left home without looking back. But they could not have renounced unless Parikshit was born. So now we're going to hear about the wonderful birth and qualities of Maharaj Parikshit. Prabhupada's purport to this verse gives us a very nice review of all the chapters that we have heard before. So I'm going to read this purport, and while I read this purport, you can be looking up at the picture here. This is the whole first canto, and Prabhupada will be talking about chapters 7 through 11, which are the middle part. I don't know if you can see it, but anyway, you can watch while we're reading here. These sages assembled in the forest of Naimisharanya inquired from Suta Goswami about the birth of Maharaj Parikshit. But in the course of the narration, other topics like the release of the Brahmastra by the son of Drona, his punishment by Arjuna, Queen Kunti Devi's prayers, the Pandavas' visit to the place where Bhishmadeva was lying, his prayers, and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwaraka were discussed. His arrival at Dwaraka and residing with the 16,000 queens, etc., were narrated. The sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they wanted to turn to the original topic, and thus the inquiry was made by Shonaka Rishi. So the subject of the release of the Brahmastra weapon by Ashvatthama is renewed. So now Prabhupada has given us a very brief review of chapter 7 to 11. Now I want to take you back to chapter 4. And that is the beginning of chapter 4. The sages asked Sutta about Maharaj Parikshit. Now this is verses 9 to 12 in chapter 4. So I'm going to read you these verses. They're asking about the first-class devotee, Maharaj Parikshit. He was so exalted, increasing the prestige of the Panu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit on the bank of the Ganga to fast until death? He was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed insuperable kingly opulences. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? So usually we see somebody renounces. If he has nothing to renounce, he's poor, or he's old, or he's a failure in material life, or he's handicapped. We see a lot of renunciants here in Vrindavan who are handicapped. But Parikshit was not like that. He was young. He had such a kingdom. Nobody would challenge him. He was a success in life. So it's inconceivable how he could give up everything and sit on the bank of the Ganga. And finally, the sages said, well, even if he wasn't attached, still, so many people were depending on him. Their last question, those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So even though Emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was a shelter for others? How could he do it? The whole kingdom was depending on him. But he did it. And now, beginning with this chapter, Sutta will explain the answers to these questions of the sages of Naimisharanya back in chapter 4. Normally, we hear the life story of a person from his birth, just like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We hear that he was born with his umbilical cord tied like a Brahmin thread, and he was chanting Gayatri coming out of the womb, in the womb before he was born. But Parikshit, we hear his history even in the womb. He was such a great devotee. The sages are asking, we'll see here in verse 2, about what he was doing when he was in the womb of his mother. How was the great emperor Parikshit, who was a highly intelligent and great devotee born in that womb, how did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? So such a person, they want to know what he was doing before his birth in the womb and after his death. So what kind of, this is such a history, such a great emperor. We never hear about somebody's life in the womb and somebody's after his death, what did he do? So this is a very wonderful history of Maharaj Parikshit that we're going to be hearing from Sutta Goswami. So in the second verse, purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how, this is about the middle of the purport, Maharaj Parikshit is especially famous as one who was protected by Vishnu. When he was unduly cursed by a Brahmin son, he could have invoked the mercy of the Lord to save him, but he did not want to because he was a pure devotee. So why don't pure devotees want to invoke the mercy of the Lord to save them? What's wrong with that? Isn't it in Shinga Devi? Yes. Prabhupada says, the devotee never asks the Lord for any undue favor, like protecting him from death. So this is Maharaj Parikshit, such a devotee. And another reason why he didn't want to counteract a curse, Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, a little bit more, he did not want to interfere with the current of the time. He knew it was unjustified, but he knew the age of Kali had begun, and the first symptom of the age, namely degradation of the highly talented Brahmana community, had also begun. So he knew Kali means destruction, quarrel. It's a time for destruction. So he said, anyway, if I live or I die, it's up to Krishna. This is Krishna's mercy. We'll see in the 9th chapter how he reacts to this curse, such a wonderful way. So Prabhupada says, he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and very properly. Being fortunate, he got at least 7 days to prepare himself to meet death. And so he properly utilized the time in the association of Shukadeva Goswami, the great saint and devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada says he was fortunate. So you tell anybody in this world, you're going to die in 7 days. They're going to think they're fortunate. They said, why me? Why I have to die in seven? I didn't finish everything I have to do. This is not fortune. This is the worst misfortune that could happen. He's fortunate, Prabhupada said. So the mentality of the devotee is quite different from the mentality of a materialistic person when they see death approaching. So usually we do anything in our hands to stop death. But here, Parikshit, he had it in his hand. He could stop it. He could have stopped his death. He didn't do it. So let us learn about this wonderful personality, Maharaj Parikshit. Verse 3. We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. The end of the purport, Prabhupada explains how to receive knowledge. He also explains how not to receive knowledge. How in Prabhupada's time there were many different types of gurus who would try to impart knowledge to the disciples in very crazy ways. Prabhupada says there is no need for medical performances or occult mysticism for miraculous effects. So what is the actual way to receive knowledge that Prabhupada explains? Two words. Yes, Marangopal. Ardent
Hearing.
Yes. Eagerness to hear. Actually, if you're eager to hear, that means you're going to be eager to apply the philosophy also. So this is the end of the purport that I was reading from here. Verse 4, Shisuta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition, was freed from all sorts of sense gratification. Because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of the Lord Shri Krishna. So what was Maharaj Yudhisthira's qualification to be emperor? He was a devotee. He knew the science of Krishna, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. Therefore, he could rule, he could be emperor of the whole world. So Maharaj Parikshit, he had no personal ambition, and he actually felt for all of his citizens. Prabhupada says in the purport, his motto of administration was all good for the citizens. So what was good for the citizens? Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that he wanted them to become devotees of Lord Krishna. This is what was the desire of Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhisthira. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, let's see, this is about the middle. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew this science of Krishna very well, for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualification of administering the state. And at the end of the purport, Prabhupada explains how everyone was happy. This is the last two sentences. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. And thus, the parts and parcels of the Lord, the living beings under his careful administration, were perfectly attended with all comforts in this life and all progress in the next. That is the way of perfect management of state administration. So because he had no personal motive, he was always thinking for the welfare of others. And because of his purity, the demigods were helping him in his administration. We'll see in the next verse, verse 5. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhisthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. Verse 6. O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. So here in the purport, Prabhupada says, the whole world is full of hungry living beings. What is the hunger of this world? Is it for good food, shelter, what?
Spiritual atmosphere.
Spiritual food, spiritual defense, Prabhupada says. This is the poverty, this is the hunger of this world. Spiritual sense gratification, Prabhupada says. These can be obtained in the association of the Supreme Spirit. This is all explained by Srila Prabhupada in paragraph 2. Lord Shri Krishna, therefore, one who has them cannot be attracted by the so-called food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification of the material world, even if they are relished by the denizens of the heavenly planet. I remember this drama that the groups performed, and we have the fish out of water, a very good fish out of water. You picture that fish in your mind, how he was suffering without everyone. They were trying to give him nice food, nice clothes, everything a fish would not want, actually. Actually, all he wanted was the water. So Yudhisthira was like this. He had all these opulences, the whole world unchallenged, but he didn't care anything for it without Krishna. Actually, without Krishna, it meant nothing to him. Just like Kunti, in her prayer, she said, as the name and fame of a particular body vanishes with the disappearance of the body. So our name and fame is useless unless you look at us, Krishna. And she said also, take away these opulences. What's the use? When we had nothing, you were with us. Now we have everything, you're leaving. So what's the use of these opulences? And now they have the opulences, but Krishna is in Dwarka. So therefore, he's thinking these opulences are insignificant. Insignificant. So Kunti was saying, now we got our opulences, we are losing you. Better we stay poor. Let us steer the property of those who are poverty-stricken. So even the kingdom without your lotus feet, it's not beautiful. So without Krishna, nothing can satisfy. So Yudhisthira, he was always engaged in devotional service to Krishna. And therefore, he was satisfied, and his citizens were satisfied. And which verse in Bhagavatam, which you should learn, you have learned, tells us that devotional service can satisfy us? Madhavan Puri. Yes. Hoksajay. Haituki pratihata yayatma. So Yudhisthira Maharaja's service was a haituki, a pratihata, and therefore yayatma supersedati. He was satisfied. And his citizens were satisfied also. Verse 7. So now the story begins. Oh, son of Bhrigu, Shonaka. When the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashtama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Prabhupada explains in the purport, the word vira, heroic, the word vira was used because he was feeling, he was a small embryo, but he was feeling this burning heat of the Brahmastra, and he was tolerating it. He could tolerate it because he was such a great fighter. He was, Prabhupada says, even in that helpless condition, the child Pariksha endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. And for this reason, the word vira has been used. So this is the end of the purport. Verse 8. He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful blackish and fallible body, and he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the Lord became such a size so that the embryo, Parikshit, could see him. He became just suitable for his vision. So in the purport of verse 9, about the middle, Prabhupada says, the Lord can become bigger than thousands of universes and can become smaller than an atom at the same time. So there is a verse in Brahma Samhita that says that. I can't remember it just now, but what is that? Yeah, that's the verse I was thinking of. It's not Brahma Samhita. Dantarasta Pramanu Chayantarastam. Thank you. Yeah, that actually I was thinking of that verse. Anoraniyam. He's bigger than the biggest. So as the universal form, he's bigger than everything. And as the deity, he becomes small enough that we can hold him in our hands. And this is what Srila Prabhupada explains here in the purport, the Archivigraha. This is near the end. He accepts the form of Archivigraha, worshipable deity, just to accept service from his different incapable devotees. Who are these incapable devotees that Prabhupada is talking about? Yes, the Prakriti Bhaktas? Yes. Yes, anybody else? Yes, Vrindavan. See, yes. We are incapable of seeing Krishna. You had something, comment? What is your name? Abhinanda. Same comment. Yes. This is the problem, we're incapable. We don't have spiritual senses. We can't see Krishna. We can't hear Krishna. We can't smell Krishna. Therefore, Krishna comes. He's so merciful. He comes in a form so that we may see him in the temple. We may talk to him. We may pray to him. And he may answer our prayers. So verse 10 and 11, he also came to Parikshit in the form that he could see. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought it to be him. So now just imagine the sun. The sun is evaporating gallons of water from the ocean. Now, what's a drop of dew for the sun to evaporate? So in the same way, Krishna, the whole material world is coming from him, the whole Brahman effulgence. So the Brahmastra is just like a drop of dew of the Brahman. So for him, it's nothing to counteract the Brahmastra weapon. So therefore, this analogy is being given here. While thus being observed by the child, Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and Protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. So at the end of the purport, Prabhupada makes a very interesting comment, last few sentences, that just like Parikshit was in the womb of his mother, so we're in the womb of our mother, all of us, right now. Mother Nature. Prabhupada says, this material covering of the effulgent firmament is also something like a womb of the Mother Nature, and we are all put into the womb by the Lord, the Father of all living beings. He is present everywhere, even in this material womb of Mother Durga, and those who are deserving can see the Lord. So even though we're in this dark, dark womb of Mother Nature, Krishna comes so we can see him. He comes as the Archivigraha. He comes in the form of his holy name so that we can associate with him. Such is the mercy of Krishna. Verse 12. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Verse 13. King Yudhisthira, who was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, had the purificatory process of birth performed. Learned Brahmanas, headed by Domya and Kripa, recited auspicious hymns. Prabhupada explains the significance of Kripa, Kripacharya, in the purport. Why is it significant that they invited Kripa to chant the mantras at the birth of Parikshit? Yes. He killer of Abhimanyu. Yes. He was the killer of Abhimanyu, one of the killers. Right. He was there. Yes. So he was the murderer of Parikshit's father. And now he is there for Parikshit's birth to chant the mantras. And then when Yudhisthira renounces, then he will put Kripa in charge of Parikshit. So amazing, amazing Vedic culture. Amazing culture. How they accepted Kripa as the guru for Parikshit. What's that? No. They accepted him as... I mean, everything's finished. The battle's over. No, we're not angry anymore. Just at the time of the battle, we do our duty. And now the battle's over. And now we do our duty. Duty is essential in the Vedic culture. Verse 14. Upon the birth of a son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the Brahmanas. Very nice to be a Brahman in the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Yes. The learned Brahmanas, who were very satisfied with the charities of the king, addressed him as the chief amongst the Prus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of descent from the Prus. The Brahmana said, this spotless son is restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the Personality of Godhead, in order to oblige you. He was saved when he was doomed to be destroyed by an irresistible supernatural weapon. For this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the Personality of Godhead. What's the name in Sanskrit for Vishnuratha? Yeah, Vishnuratha. Rata, Vishnuratha. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. So, Prabhupada describes the different categories of devotees, and he describes who is a Mahabhagavat. Who can tell me who is a Mahabhagavat, according to Srila Prabhupada? End of the purport.
It says he's perfect in all respects.
Perfect in all respects.
And he sees, he has a certain vision.
He has a certain vision.
I've lost it now.
Yeah, what's his vision? Acha.
He says that he sees all living things as spiritual thoughts.
Okay.
The religion is supreme. And because of that, he's free from anxiety and illusion.
Right. So here in the purport, Prabhupada says those who see everything in the Lord or everything of the Lord and also see in everything an eternal relation of the Lord. So there is nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord are called Mahabhagavats. So we see everything but the Lord, and they see only the Lord. This is the Mahabhagavat. So we are part and parcel of the Lord. So they see everything as part of Krishna, part of his energy, and they also see the parcel that everything belongs to him. You have a, if you have your body, then the part of your body is your hand. So in that sense, we are one with Krishna. And then we have the parcel, we have our book. So in that sense, we are different from Krishna. So he sees everything simultaneously one and different from Krishna. In the Lord, of the Lord, and relation, eternal relation of the Lord. These are the first great devotees of the Lord, perfect in all respects. So Prabhupada says that also he's a Mahabhagavat because he got special protection by Krishna. Verse 18. The good King Yudhisthira inquired, O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great royal family? So someone who is born in the family of the emperor has many, many duties, even from birth, many, many obligations, many things are expected from him. So Yudhisthira is in great anxiety. He wants to know, is this child going to be qualified to take over the throne? He's always ready to renounce. So now that he has a child that is qualified, then he's very anxious to find out, well, is he actually qualified? So he's inquiring from the astrologers. Srila Prabhupada, in the middle of the purport, again gives the qualifications of the emperor. The reigning king should be a pious, chivalrous devotee of the Lord, and fear personified for the upstarts. Not nonviolent, like Arjuna wanted to be, the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He has to be fear personified. He must also leave an heir apparent equally qualified to rule over the innocent citizens. So this was Maharaj Yudhisthira's anxiety. Will I be able to renounce and leave somebody qualified to take the throne? Verse 19. So now the brahmanas will answer and pacify Yudhisthira. The learned brahmana said, O son of Pritha, this child shall be exactly like King Ikshvaku, son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born. And as for following the brahminical principles, especially in being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Ram, the personality of Godhead, the son of Maharaj Dasharat. So Parikshit is being compared to Ikshvaku. What is Ikshvaku famous for besides maintaining? He received the Gita. He heard Bhagavad Gita from Manu. So Parikshit, he will also hear Bhagavatam from Shukadev. He will be like Ikshvaku in that sense also, that he will hear Bhagavatam. And he is also being compared to Lord Ram. Who can be compared to Lord Ram? Parikshit Maharaj. Why? What was the vow that Ram is famous for keeping? Of course, he's famous for many vows. But what is... Yes?
One wife.
One wife. Yeah, that's one of them. I don't know if that's what exactly Prabhupada is meaning. Hari Purush? Yes, protect everyone who at least once surrenders. There's a famous statement. What is that statement? Whoever... Yes. Yes. Okay. And now what's the vow that we normally think about? Of course, that's the best vow. What's the vow that Ram is so famous? He took a vow. He took a vow.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That was that he fulfilled his father's prayer.
Yes, yes, yes.
To go into the forest for 14 years.
14 years.
It was very undesirable. Very undesirable.
Bharata came and tried to convince him. As soon as Bharata found out the news, he came to Ram. Bharata himself put on tree bark and matted his hair, and he came to Lord Ram and begged him, "You please come, I'll do the vow. You come and rule the kingdom, and I'll do the vow." Ram said, "No, I must follow my vow." And so then Bharata said, "Okay, I'll take your shoes. The shoes will be king, and I will be the servant. I will be the minister of the kingdom." And so he was worshiping the shoes of Ram. So Parikshit will be like this in regards to vow. So true to his vow. In fact, Parikshit is going to be compared to three incarnations. I mean, even Krishna, even Ram, even Narayan. So let us hear the glories of Parikshit. This child will be a munificent donor of charity and protector of the surrendered, like the famous King Shibi of the Ushinara country. And he will expand the name and fame of his family, like Bharata, the son of Maharaj Dushyanta. How is Bharata famous? Bharatvarsh. This whole land is named after Bharat. Okay, he's famous for that. Famous like Bharat. Shibi gave his own flesh to protect a pigeon and sacrificed his own son for the citizens' welfare. That's in Mahabharata, actually. How he himself, with his own hand, sacrificed his son, he and his wife. So amazing. People. Parikshit is compared to him, Shibi, who sacrificed his own son. Bharata, whose this land is named after. So what a great personality who is going to be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Amongst great bowmen, this child will be as good as Arjuna. He will be as irresistible as fire and unsurpassable as the ocean. So Arjuna, of course, we know his glories from Bhagavad Gita, from Mahabharata, that nobody could compare. He was even practicing at night, and he was the greatest bowman. Parikshit will be comparable to him. Verse 22. This child will be as strong as a lion, as worthy a shelter as the Himalayan mountains. He will be forbearing like the earth and tolerant as his parents. So the earth is very tolerant because all, especially nowadays, Prabhupada always talks about how the earth is tolerating so many things. What is the earth? How is the earth tolerant nowadays? Yes. They're drilling for petrol. They're taking all the petrol out. It only shakes earthquakes, yes. And atomic bombs. All these things are very disturbing to the earth. She's tolerating. Mother Earth. This child will be like his grandfather Yudhisthira, or Brahma, in equanimity of mind. He will be munificent like the lord of the Kailash hill, Shiva. And he will be the resort of everyone, like the supreme personality of Godhead Narayan, who is even the shelter of the goddess of fortune. So here he's compared to Lord Brahma. Prabhupada explains in the purport how Brahma was criticized for his creation by the gopis. The topmost devotees, imagine, the greatest pure devotees criticize Brahma. So it doesn't pay to be a manager. You're going to be criticized no matter what you do. Everyone criticizes the manager. When there's a good result, everyone takes the credit. And when something bad happens, then the manager gets the blame, the one in charge. So Brahma got the blame, but he kept his mental equanimity. We'll read in the third canto, how sometimes in the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma was creating all the nascent principles. Demons were born. They went to devour and eat up Brahma. And then after that, demigods were born. And it was very nice. And then again, some demons. And then demigods. So he had to be very equipoised in mind in order to do the creation. Ups and downs in the creation. So Parikshit is compared to Lord Brahma in this sense. Parikshit is also compared to Yudhisthira. How was Yudhisthira equipoised? So many problems in Mahabharata. You read, and Draupadi, Bhima, they were always on Yudhisthira's case. Why did you do this? Why did you do this gambling? Now look at us, we're Kshatriyas, we should be out fighting, and here we are living in the forest, like sages. But Yudhisthira, he never compromised his religious principles, his vow of truthfulness. And one time, Duryodhan came to the forest, and he was coming to make fun of the Pandavas with all his wives, all his opulences. And on the way, he got caught by the Gandharvas. Everyone was captured. And Bhima was very happy. He said, yes, this is wonderful. Now we don't have to worry anymore about fighting with the Kauravas. Yudhisthira said, no, no, you have to go, and you have to release them, Bhima and Arjuna. So he sent them to release the Kauravas from the Gandharvas. So this is Yudhisthira. This is how equipoised, and this is how Parikshit is going to be. He's going to be compared, he's compared to Yudhisthira in mental equanimity, Brahma. Narayan, the shelter of everyone, even the shelter of Kali. So when we'll see how when Parikshit, when he's cursed, he will show us how equipoised he is. And we will actually get a glimpse of the heart of a pure devotee and how he takes tribulations. Verse 24. This child will be almost as good as Lord Shri Krishna by following in his footsteps. And in magnanimity, he will become as great as King Rantidev. And in religion, he will be like Maharaj Yayati. So, Shibi, Rantidev, Shiva, he's compared to three people for charity, munificence. Actually, I forgot to tell you, there was one thing I wanted to tell you about Shiva. That how he, of course we know, what is Shiva's name? Ashutosh, very easily pleased, because he's doing his meditation and Sankarshan, and so many people are coming to disturb his meditation. So he's, okay, take and go. Just take. He doesn't think, oh, is this good, is this bad? No, just take this benediction. So Prabhupada one time was talking about this. When you're chanting japa, sometimes people come to disturb you. You see, you say, okay, Haribo Prabhu, and just glorify them, and then they'll go away. And so this was Prabhupada's message. Anyway, Shiva, there's just one very nice story that illustrates how he is so munificent that we know how Lord Shiva lives. He's so renounced, he lives under a tree. Right. So one day his wife Parvati was complaining, I need a house. We're always underneath a tree. Why don't you get me a house? So finally he said, okay, I'll build you a nice, beautiful house, golden house, beautiful things inside. So it's time to go move in the house. They do the housewarming ceremony. And then it's time to pay the Brahmins. And they had nothing to give the Brahmins. So they gave the house. So they're back under the tree again. Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, he's very munificent. He'll give everything for the Brahmins. Even Prithu Maharaj was like that too. And so Parikshit is compared to Shiva. He's compared to Shibi. He's compared to Rantidev. These are all, Rantidev was starving. He was starving, 40 days fast. Finally, time to break the fast. And somebody comes along to beg him for his, okay, gives his last food. Then, okay, at least I'll get some water. And he's ready to drink, and a chandala, and dogs. And he gives it to the chandala. So, Parikshit is compared to Rantidev. All these great personalities. What is the character of Parikshit? So Prabhupada, in the beginning of the purport, explains how about following Lord Shri Krishna. The last instruction of Lord Shri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is that one should give up everything and should follow in the footsteps of the Lord alone. Less intelligent persons do not agree to this great instruction of the Lord, as ill luck would have it. But one who is actually intelligent catches up the sublime instruction and is immensely benefited. So Parikshit, he caught up this instruction of following Lord Shri Krishna. Prabhupada, in the middle of the purport, he has some italics, means it's emphasis. To follow the instructions of the Lord is to associate with the Lord. The Lord is not a material object whose presence one has to feel for such association. The Lord is present everywhere and at all times. It is quite possible to have his association simply by following his instruction, because the Lord and his instruction and the Lord and his name, fame, attributes, and paraphernalia are all identical with him, being absolute knowledge. So this is the life of Maharaj Parikshit. He gave up everything to follow Lord Shri Krishna, as did his forefathers. Narottam Das Thakur says, one whose only possession is the lotus feet of the Lord, he knows the essence of devotional service. So Parikshit Maharaj, because this was his only possession, lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna, therefore, he was always engaged in devotional service. As Lord Krishna says, give up everything and surrender to me. In verse 25, this child will be like Bali Maharaj in patience, a staunch devotee of Lord Krishna like Prahlad Maharaj, a performer of many Ashwamedha horse sacrifices, and a follower of the old and experienced men. We'll hear how he's following the old and experienced men tomorrow. Dvija Shiksha, Dvija Varya Shikshaya, he was always following the Brahmins. We'll hear about that tomorrow. So Bali Maharaj was so patient. Imagine the position he was in. All of his riches were taken away. There is a verse here, 8:22:30, about Bali Maharaj. Although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. So Parikshit will be cursed unfairly. And he will, and as a reaction to that, he'll give up everything. He'll renounce everything. And he will sit patiently and hear Bhagavatam. Actually, this quality of patience, this is described as a symptom of bhava, a nectar of devotion. And Parikshit is the example. Patience and perseverance, I believe. And Parikshit is an example of this quality of bhava, patience, perseverance, among all his other qualities. This is Parikshit Maharaj. Next, verse 26. This child will be the father of kings who will be like sages. For world peace and for the sake of religion, he will be the chastiser of the upstarts and the quarrelsome. So Prabhupada, in the purport, says, the wisest man in the world is a devotee of the Lord. The sages are called wise men, and there are different types of wise men for different branches of knowledge. Unless, therefore, the king or the head of the state is the wisest man, he cannot control all types of wise men in the state. Therefore, he's Rajarshi. He's Mahabhagavat. There is one lecture Prabhupada was talking about Parikshit, and he said, everyone should be Bhagavat, but the king should be Mahabhagavat. Otherwise, how can he control the Bhagavats? So he is Mahabhagavat, Maharaj Parikshit. And this is the most important quality. We've heard so many qualifications of what it means to be a king. Most important is that he is Mahabhagavat, devotee of the Lord. This is the most important qualification of somebody who is emperor of the world. After hearing about his death, which will be caused by the bite of a snake bird sent by the son of a Brahmin, he will get himself freed from all material attachment and surrender unto the personality of Godhead, taking shelter of him. After inquiring about proper self-knowledge from the son of Vyasadeva, who will be a great philosopher, he will renounce all material attachment and achieve a life of fearlessness. So Prabhupada talks about this material world, how it's a prison, and everybody in this prison is full of fear, either by breaking the laws or by not breaking the laws. Still, everyone is full of fearfulness. And this fearfulness is called anxiety. This is about the middle of the purport. Prabhupada says, everyone in the material life, in all species and varieties of life, it's full of anxieties, either by breaking or without breaking the laws of nature. Liberation or mukti means getting relief from these constant anxieties. How to get relief? What is Prabhupada's solution for getting relief of anxieties? Quite a unique solution in this purport. It's a different solution than we normally hear. Sankirtan. Okay, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, yes, you don't get free from anxiety. You change it to spiritual. Material anxiety is not good, but spiritual anxiety is okay. Of course, the doctor told me no anxiety. I must have no anxiety, spiritual or material. So sometimes you have to just be equipoised. But actually, spiritual anxiety is very good. Very good for our spiritual life. Prabhupada says in the purport, it is possible, liberation is possible, only when the anxiety is changed to devotional service of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the chance to change the quality of anxiety from matter to spirit. Spiritual anxiety. Imagine. When will that day come? This is done in the association of a learned philosopher, like the self-realized Shukadeva Goswami, the great son of Sri Vyasadeva. Maharaj Pariksit, after receiving warning of his death, took advantage of this opportunity by association with Shukadeva Goswami and achieved the desired result. What are some examples of spiritual anxiety that we've heard about from the Shastra? Spiritual Sankirtan. Yashoda. Yes, but Yashoda is in anxiety. Krishna is walking on these stones, Sri Vrindavan. Narada Muni's anxiety. How to present, how to preach. Nrsinghan. Oh. Lord Chaitanya's anxiety. And Haridas wanted to relieve him from that anxiety. We should all relieve Lord Chaitanya. Maharaj. Krishna is in anxiety when Radharani is not happy with him. Madhavendra Puri. Srila Prabhupada's anxiety for Juhu Beach. Yes, Nrsingadevi. Gopi's anxiety when Krishna leaves from Mathura. Sri Vrindavan? Yes. Sages are in so much anxiety. How can we, what is the ultimate benefit for these people in Kali Yuga? Please tell us, Sutta. Yes, Yashoda. Oh, Srinivasa and Narottam lost all the books. Can you imagine? Only one printing. They lost all the books. Shingadevi. How to preach. Yes, Adi Purusha. Okay, Gopi's anxiety about being Krishna's feet being pricked by thorns and stones. Leela Madhuri, last one. Okay, Jiva Goswami is rejected by Rupa Goswami. Okay, now next question is, we've heard about all these wonderful things from Shastra. Now, practical application time. Is there anything we should be in anxiety about? Of course, doctor told me no, but I mean, maybe sometimes. Yes, Vanamali? When will I become a pure devotee? Yes, Sri Vrindavan, what's your anxiety? Oh, no, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean that. Okay, no. What did you want to say? Chanting properly. How to become purified. Get rid of these anarthas. Parvati. How to have faith in the process to progress. Madan Gopal. Okay, I'll give you some guidelines. I gave them to Adi Purush. She'll print them out. And I eliminated some questions. So I hope that will relieve your anxiety to some extent. Nrsingadevi. Okay, anxiety to please. That's very nice. Anxiety, how we can please the spiritual master. That's a very good one. How to please the spiritual master. Is my service pleasing? Is this pleasing to Prabhupada, to the spiritual master? So this is our anxiety, our spiritual anxiety. Yes, Abhinandan? Prabhu. Oh, we have a Sankirtan devotee in our midst. Anxiety to how to distribute Prabhupada's books. Yes, that was the anxiety of the sages. How to distribute these books, Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavat. Yes. So we have the same anxiety as Lord Chaitanya, the sages. Divinbar, last one. How to protect society from attacks. This is the concern of the GBC. GBC secretary. Yes. So reflected in the mind of the GBC secretary. Okay. You think big. Okay. We'll go to the next verse. Verse 29. Thus, those who are expert in astrological knowledge and performance of the birth ceremony instructed King Yudhisthira about future history of his child. Then, being sumptuously remunerated, they all returned to their respective homes. Verse 30. So his son would become famous in the world as Parikshit, examiner, because he would come to examine all human beings in his search after that personality whom he saw before his birth. Thus he would come to constantly contemplate him. So Prabhupada, in this purport, paragraph 2, I'd like to read this paragraph, because Prabhupada gives us a glimpse into his own life as a child. And there are italics again, I believe, so we should definitely read this purport, this paragraph 2. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from his very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord, like Maharaj Parikshit. One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Parikshit to have the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother. But even if he's not so fortunate, he can be made so if the parents of the child desire him to be so. There is a practical example in my personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord. And when I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me a couple of forms of Radha and Krishna. In a playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister. And I used to imitate the performances of a neighboring temple of Radha Govinda. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple and copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. So actually, one time a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, at what point did you become self-realized or God-conscious, God-realized? At one point in your life, he asked Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes the reporters were very, very funny, very picky. At what point in your life did you become Krishna conscious? So Prabhupada answered, at the age of 4. So this is when he started worshiping Radha Govinda, Radha Govinda deities. He said, I became self-realized at the age of 4 when he got his deities. So this is, here we have it here in this purport, he explains. And I was reading somewhere, maybe in Lilamrita, he used to stand for hours. What 4-year-old child is going to stand for hours in front of the deities? Not my child. But any child is, even when he's older, it's very, very difficult just to stand still for a 4-year-old child, especially at the age of 4. Prabhupada used to stand and look at the deities when he was 4 years old. So this was his self-realization, his God-realization. Prabhupada continues, my father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Shishima Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again, I revived my old habit. And the same playful deities became my worshipful deities in proper regulation. This was followed up until I left the family connection, and I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impression, which was developed later into regulative devotional service by his divine grace. Sometimes we see our children at a young age, they have these impressions. But when they become teenagers, it seems like they completely forgot these impressions. But actually, it's in their heart and they don't lose it. Because sometimes I catch my son when he thinks I'm not looking, and he's chanting. Otherwise, he won't chant. If I tell them, chant your round, chant Hare Krishna, he won't chant. But if I'm not looking, if I'm doing something, and I come in, sometimes I see him chanting. So they can't give it up. Can't forget Krishna. So anyway, this is these impressions. These children are very fortunate to have these impressions. So another point here is that what Uttara was thinking, oh, this Brahmashtra, this is the worst thing that could happen. She was running to Krishna. The Brahmashtra is coming. Please save my embryo. Please protect me. Pai Pai Mahayogin. She runs to Krishna. And Krishna goes inside the womb. So what was actually seeming to be the worst possible thing to happen became the greatest blessing for Pariksit Maharaj. That he saw Krishna in the womb of his mother. By the grace of Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama sent the Brahmashtra. So by the mercy of Ashwatthama, he got to see Krishna in the womb. And he never forgot it. For his whole life. That's why he's called Pariksit. He's always examined. Is this the person? Is this it? And he was never satisfied with whoever he saw. Because he couldn't see Krishna. He never saw Krishna again. So how we can see mercy in calamity is being taught to us by these great devotees, Kunti, Pariksit. How we can see the mercy of Krishna in everything. Verse 31. As the moon in its waxing fortnight develops day after day, so the royal prince Pariksit very soon developed luxuriantly under the care and full facilities of his guardian grandfathers. Just at this time, King Yudhisthira was considering performing a horse sacrifice to get freed from sins incurred from fighting with kinsmen. But he became anxious to get some wealth, for there are no surplus funds outside of fines and tax collection. Verse 33. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north, left by King Maruta. So Maruta was a very special king. He did one sacrifice where Lord Shiva was pleased with him, and he gave him a gold mountain peak. Mountain peak made of gold. Prabhupada says, it's still there in the Himalayas, and modern adventurers may try and go find it. So if anyone needs some gold or a whole peak of gold, he may go and try and find. Somebody is having a problem financially, you may go to the Himalayas and find this mountain peak. Prabhupada says, he's challenging everyone here. May go in. He was so powerful an emperor, this is Maruta now, that at the day's end of sacrifice, the demigods from the other planets, like Indra, Chandra, and Brihaspati, used to visit his palace. Because he had the gold peak at his disposal, he had sufficient gold in his possession. So demigods, of course, if you're going to entertain the demigods, everything has to be best. Everything must be made of gold. So therefore, he had it. He could entertain the demigods. Yudhisthira could also entertain the demigods. We'll see. Tomorrow we'll hear chapter 16. Actually, Pariksit. It'll be about Pariksit. Pariksit. Even Yudhisthira also was entertaining the demigods. So, verse 34, by those riches, the king could procure the ingredients for 3 horse sacrifices. Thus, the pious King Yudhisthira, who was very fearful after the battle of Kurukshetra, pleased Lord Hari, personality of Godhead. So again, Prabhupada makes a point here. In paragraph 1, somewhere, at the end of paragraph 1, how there was heaps of gold plates just lying in the Himalayas. Prabhupada says, the more astonishing thing is that no subject of the state collected such unclaimed gold for industrial enterprise or anything like that. This means the state citizens were completely satisfied with all necessities of life and therefore not inclined to accept unnecessary productive enterprises for sense gratification. They didn't take the gold. It was still there. Just imagine how satisfied the citizens must have been. Kingdom of King Yudhisthira. So then Prabhupada explains about horse sacrifice. And then in paragraph 4, there's a very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada explaining the sacrifice of this age. Let any man of any place or community, caste, or creed be engaged in any sort of occupational duty, but he must agree to perform sacrifices as it is recommended in the scriptures for the particular place, time, and person. In the Vedic literatures, it is recommended that in Kali Yuga, people engage in glorifying the Lord by chanting the holy name of Krishna, Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Paramrajet, without offense. By doing so, one can be freed from all sins and thus can attain the highest perfection of life by returning home back to Godhead. So Prabhupada talks about heaps of gold in the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And he says, now, instead of heaps of gold, we have heaps of paper. Heaps of paper. And plastic. Heaps of plastic in Vrindavan, in Braj. Heaps of plastic. Of course, he's referring to money. Heaps of paper. That's what he was referring to. Kali Yuga money. Heaps of paper. So there's no way we can... Plastic credit cards, not even the paper. Okay, we've improved, we've advanced. Verse 35 and 36. Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, being invited to the sacrifices by Maharaj Yudhisthira, saw to it that they were performed by qualified twice-born Brahmins. After that, for the pleasure of the relatives, the Lord remained a few months. O Shanaka, thereafter, the Lord, having bade farewell to King Yudhisthira, Draupadi and other relatives, started for the city of Dwaraka, accompanied by Arjuna and other members of the Yadu dynasty. So now Yudhisthira is very satisfied, hearing all the great qualities of Parikshit, that he can renounce now that he has such a qualified heir to the throne. He will be charitable like Shivi, Shiva, Rantidev, mentally balanced like Brahma and Yudhisthira, forbearing like the earth and Bali Maharaj. Comparable to Lord Ram in truthfulness, Lord Krishna, he'll follow Lord Krishna. A devotee like Prahlad. And the most important, this is the most important quality, that he'll be a Mahabhagavat devotee of the Lord. Because only the wisest man can control everyone. So this is the qualification of Maharaj Parikshit. Throughout his life, he's protected by Lord Krishna, and especially at death, he goes back to Godhead. So we'll hear about his glorious activities tomorrow. How he fulfills all these predictions of the astrologers. And now that Parikshit is born, of course you've already heard how Yudhisthira has renounced the kingdom. So tomorrow we pick up the story with Parikshit on the throne of Hastinapur. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. They are what? Reluctant. Two-handed form. Yeah, we'd be happy just to see the four-handed form in our heart also. Yes, that's a nice point. I know I met one devotee in one of my classes who came up to me after Gita class, and she said, you know, I didn't tell this to anyone, but actually, I like Lord Ram better than Krishna. Of course, in India, there's so many people like that, but... Yeah, you know, it's hard, I guess, to be in a Krishna conscious movement. If anyway, that's what yes, spiritual problems. Yes, undue favor. One should not desire undue favor from the Lord. Prabhupada said, "Prabhupada, a healthy life." You missed that class, didn't you? Yeah. So we should desire a healthy life. Actually, we'll hear more about this again in the second canto. Why should we want a healthy life? Good health. Shri Vrindavan? Yes, to continue his mission. Okay? Good health, yes, impossible. Yeah, I'm realizing that. I'm realizing myself in the last 2 weeks. It's very hard to do anything without good health. Okay, another, yes. Oh, question. Wait, we're still on this one. Yeah. Fire, death, and disease. Yes. Yes. Actually, there's a very wonderful story that just came to my mind on this very point, and I think it would help you to understand it. It's about one of the 12 Alwars of South India. See if I can remember this story correctly. There was, not the 12 Alwars. Anyway, it was a disciple of, I believe, Ramanujacharya. And there was one Shaivite king who was after Ramanuja, and he wanted to kill him. So in his place, the disciple who looked just like Ramanuja, Quraysh, oh, you know the story. Okay, anyway, I'll tell the story. Quraysh took his place. He dressed up like Ramanuja. He put on saffron, and Ramanuja put on the white, and he went and he escaped out of the country. So then this devotee was brought before the king, and he was pretending to be Ramanujacharya. And this Shaivite king said, "So do you accept Shiva as the Supreme Personality of Godhead?" And he said, "No, I cannot. I accept the Lord Vishnu or Krishna. I don't remember exactly who, but the Lord. Who was it? Vitala? Yes, the Lord, Supreme Lord Krishna." And so then he said, "Okay, for your disobedience, I will put out your eyes." So he blinded that devotee. So then that devotee went to South India. To which temple was it? Srirangam? Or Srirangam to Madurai. Okay. So then he used to sing in front of the deity very, very beautifully. Bhajan for the deity. He was blind and he was singing for the deity of the Lord. And every day the deity would ask him, "Oh, what do you want?" And every time the deity asked him, "What do you want?" he would think of some other devotee. "Oh, this devotee needs this and that devotee needs that." So finally his guru called him and he said, "Listen, the deity is always asking you, what do you want? So next time you should tell him, 'My dear Lord, this body which belongs to you is incomplete. So I think it would be nice if you could make it complete for your service.'" So then next time, according to his guru's order, he went in front of the deity and he said, and then he sang for the deity, and the deity asked him, "What do you want?" He said, "This body is incomplete. If you can make it complete for your service." So then he got back his sight. So the point is that the body does not belong to us. We think it belongs to us, so therefore we should be healthy so we can enjoy sense gratification. But actually, we should be healthy so we can serve Krishna. And that's this verse in second chapter. Life's desires should be to satisfy the Lord. They should not be for the senses. Because the purpose of the human life is very, very rare. It's so rare. We cannot imagine how many births we've taken before we've come to this opportunity to serve Krishna. So therefore, we should desire good health because it's Krishna's body. So we can use it for him. Yes, Parvati. Without health. And somebody just was preaching to me the other day. Dhananjaya came up to me. He said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I got some heart problem." He said, "Prabhupada said, first, you must take care of your health. And second, your rounds. And third, your service." So he was very heavy on me. Yeah, Dhananjaya. So I said, "Yes, Prabhu." You listen when Dhananjaya speaks. Yes, he's a very big devotee. Yes, Dimimba. Different angle of vision, yes. We like to hear all the angles. Okay, well, let me repeat that. Haridas Thakur said, "I wanted good health from you so I can serve you, to do big things for you. But instead I got pain, and so I got humility." Yes. You had a question, because you have to leave, right? So better ask your question before you go. To smoke. Yes, I can tell you. When Srila Prabhupada was here, they were worshipped by his sister in her house. And I used to visit Prabhupada's sister. And she used to feed me the prasad from Prabhupada's childhood deities. I can tell you stories about that prasad too, but I won't right now. Anyway, so then what happened? She was worshipping them. Then she came to Mayapur, and she gave them to the Mayapur temple. But then they got stolen. And one time some dacoits came, and they stole these small deities. So now we don't know where they are, as far as I know. That was the last I heard about them. They got stolen, yeah. After Radha Madhava were also stolen. They were this big. And then these small ones, and the Radha Madhava, yeah. The small ones. Oh. Okay, did you hear that? Janani Pujari in Mayapur was fasting after he heard these small deities were stolen, and then he had a dream where they went back to Prabhupada. So we cannot stop Krishna from going where he wants. We may think we have, these are my deities. They're not going anywhere, but it's quite possible. Okay, next question. This is the mercy of Krishna for the family of a devotee. So sometimes the devotees, they leave their families. Prabhupada explained this in one lecture, that devotees may leave their families, but Krishna takes special care of the family that the devotee leaves. And one time I heard on a tape, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, what kind of liberation? It says that the relatives of a person who is a pure devotee, they get liberation. What kind of liberation do they get? Guess. Anybody guess? Which kind of liberation? Vanamali. They get a Gyana Sukriti. Yes. Exactly. Prabhupada said that the liberation that the relatives of a devotee get is devotional service. This is their liberation. They get to become a devotee. So Vanamali explained it very nicely. He said that if you become a devotee, your family is always thinking of you. So this is their Agata Sukriti. They're thinking of you. And sometimes they even serve. They want to do something for you. I know my father's, my husband's parents, his father was he knew carpentry, and he built an altar for our deities, and he died before he died. So Agata Sukriti, it's there. The parents of a devotee. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Yes, Chivindavan. Health. We're back to health, yes. I'm going to learn this lesson well. Has two? He's faced with death, yes. Who asked who? Sannyasi asked a brahmachari. Are you ready to die for the mission? While preaching. To continue his life. Yes, if the body is able to do something, then the devotee, of course, desires to continue. Maharaj. Swastya, sadhana, seva. Swastya, health. Right, that's just like what Prabhupada said. He said health, rounds, and seva, right. Service. But then, apakva. Okay, everybody understand that? If you got a apakva bhajan.
If this worship is not ripe yet.
Not ripe, unripe bhajan. Yes.
It's,
we're going to hear about that with Pariksha Maharaj, how he prepares for the final exam. You'll hear before your exam how Pariksha prepares for his final. Yes, Vanamali. If the mind is weak, the health is weak. Okay, we're hearing some practical. Or if the health is weak, mind is weak. Okay. Yeah, so we can't imitate. This is the point. We have to know who we are, what is our position, what is our level of advancement, and work on that level. Health first. And then rounds, and then... Okay, you had a question. What is your name? Govinda Das. Okay. Okay, he didn't. His question is, can we conclude that Pariksha didn't desire self-preservation because he was already mature? And the answer is, he didn't desire he had only one desire. And there's one desire in the mind of a devotee, and that's to please Krishna. Krishna wants, I can die. If Krishna wants, I can leave. So in this case, he said he was thinking, well, Krishna, I should have died in the womb, but Krishna protected me. So if I'm cursed now, Krishna wants, then he'll protect me. Yes. Yeah, he was very happy. Actually, he was always waiting to renounce. He wasn't happy. He was like Yudhisthira. He didn't care about all the opulences. He couldn't wait till he could give up the management and engage in devotional service. So he got his chance. Yes, Srivindavan. Yeah, for himself? Yes. That's the Lord's will. Yeah, we'll see that. We'll see that in chapter 19 especially, that it is the will of the Lord. All the whole drama, it's a drama. So Jama and Parikshit is his devotee, and he's using Parikshit in the Jama. Everyone was being used to move according to the plan of the Lord so that Srimad Bhagavatam would be spoken for us. Yeah. I don't know, but he did take over. He did. Janamejaya became the king, and immediately he went out to start killing all the snakes. That was his first thing. Go kill Takshaka. And he did a snake sacrifice. Kill all the snakes in the universe. And then the sages had to come stop him. And he stopped. Yes? Yes, he was Rajarshi. Yes, Rajarshi. Yes, Prabhu. Well, he is guided. We will see in the next, we will see tomorrow. We will see. We will see tomorrow how he's guided by the Brahmins. Mahabhagavat, of course, he's the example also for everyone. So we know that when Krishna comes, he acted as a perfect kshatriya. When the pure devotees come, they act whatever position Krishna puts them in. They don't think, oh, you know, I should be a Brahmin, I'm a Mahabhagavat, you know, better to be a Brahmin. No, this is the position Krishna has given me. And we'll hear later on that in any position you are in the Varnashram, Shudra, Vaishya, Brahmin, Kshatriya, you can become a Mahabhagavat, actually. It's not a... So, and tomorrow we'll hear how he took advice of the Brahmins. They're also Mahabhagavats, actually. They're also. But he was showing also the example. Krishna showed the example, Parikshit showed the example, how an ideal king should live. Well, we will see. We'll discuss that tomorrow. And we'll see what actually it means to be the head of society. What is the qualification to be the head of the Varnashram? Yeah. Madan Gopal. Plastic money in Australia? Yes? You can't eat? Can't eat gold, you can't eat plastic. It gives you the ability to do other things. What's wrong with money? If you lived like in 1929 when there was the Great Depression, and you see that money becomes worthless. In a few hours, all the paper is useless. You can't use it to buy anything. Even hundreds, yes? Half million marks to buy a piece of bread. But gold is always valuable, but the paper... Oh, they have a lot of use for it. If you live in Indian society, yeah. No, when a lady gets married, then she has a certain amount of gold, and it belongs to her. Because if there's some problem with the husband, then she has that gold. So gold is here. You just don't see it. They're not going to wear it. They're not going to wear it everywhere. But actually, it's very important here in India. If you go to any function, like a marriage or something, and you see all the gold. Yeah, right. It was that because they had everything. They didn't need anything. They had all the food. They had all the clothes. They had everything they could desire. Okay. Well, what's the question? Oh, Adipurush. Oh, okay. Okay, you're making a point. Okay. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. You had a point here, Paramakuna? Yes, yes, that's true. Yeah, the king also drove out all disease, even Yudhisthira. There was no disease in Yudhisthira's kingdom and Ram's kingdom. Yes, right. Mental disease is number one. Yes, his wealth looking for health. Oh, that's a good one. And his youth, he spent all his health looking for wealth. We can say this about many people today. And in his old age, he spent his wealth looking for health. The good saying to remember. Yes, that's right. That's right. We'll hear about that. The grihasthas, they're meant for charity also, especially the grihasthas. They should not become misers. They're meant for dhanam, daya, mercy. And the mercy is to give in charity for the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, any Shivindavan. In the absence of a proper leader, when there's no proper heir to the throne, what's the thing to do? Okay? How to continue the tradition and the culture when the leader leaves. So your question is for the Vedic Society and for ISKCON, or what's your question? For both. The Vedic Society, there were many things they could do. That they, just like the origin of the Kuru dynasty, not the origin, but both of the kings died, Vichituvirya and his brother, they both died. The women were still alive. They didn't take Sati. And so Satyavati was asking Bhishma, you give children. We have no king. Bhishma said, no, I took the vow of Brahmacharya. So then Satyavati called Vyasadev. So in the absence of a king, then they would sometimes call the sages to have children, just like when Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas. Kshatriya ladies were still there. And so they had sages and gave them children. Yes. Oh, it was. Yeah. Yeah, that also. That's the answer, actually, to this, the whole life of Parikshit. When Krishna leaves, everything is inauspicious. In Krishna's absence, then a king who is a Mahabhagwat, he can be the same as Krishna. Now, in the absence of a Mahabhagwat, then we have the holy name and we have Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, for those two things, we need the devotees. Yes, again. The gold. We're back to the gold. More, yes, yes. About gold. Because, yeah, so when we get to chapter 17, because Kali, he needed a place to stay, and there was no place in Parikshit's kingdom where the sinful activities were being performed. So therefore he said, okay, you can stay where there is gold. And then we'll hear how Prabhupada says, Kali became gold standardized. Kali. So this is a very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. I'm sure we will hear it. Either I will tell you or Bharijan will tell you. I don't know what Krishna wants yet. So we'll see what is his desire. I'm sure you'll hear this purport. Okay, Amala Gora. The Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are meant to cooperate for the welfare of the mass of people. Brahmana sages endeavor to enlighten the people by perfect knowledge. Kshatriyas are meant for their protection. Advise. Yes, they advise the Kshatriyas. That is their... Yeah, especially the Kshatriyas. We'll see tomorrow how Parikshit... First thing, he takes advice from the Brahmanas. Even though he's a Mahabhagavat, he does not just say, okay, I'm Mahabhagavat, I'll tell you all what to do. No, he consults. Even Krishna. Krishna used to consult. Uddhava. They used to consult. They were not independent. Yes. There's different kinds of Brahmins. Yeah. If you read Bhagavatam, 7th canto, it talks about, in Prahlad Maharaj's teaching, well, it's after Prahlad Maharaj, Yudhisthira's teaching Narada, no, sorry. Yeah, Narada's instructing Yudhisthira. And he's telling that there's different kinds of Brahmins. Some are materialists, some are after karma, some are after gyan, and some are devotees. It's different kinds of Brahmins. Yeah, so that we'll see. We'll learn more about it. Yeah, there's three paths in the Vedas, karma, gyan, upasana. And the highest upasana is, of course, upasana means worship the demigods. So they do these three paths, and the highest, of course, is the Vaishnava. When a Brahmana becomes a Vaishnava, then he's the highest. Prabhupada explains this many times. Darshan. Yeah, there's some slight difference. And I asked Gopi Pranadana about it once, and I forgot what he said. But there is a slight difference between karma and upasana, but it's very similar. It's very similar. And we'll hear about, actually we'll see that in the second canto, the first, second, third chapters. It'll be like that. We'll hear karma, gyan, upasana, universal form. We'll hear different levels of the Vedic culture, different types of worship. And Prabhupada at the end, he will say, this is all panchupasana. We'll read about it in the purports, yeah. Yeah, proper worship is to understand there are parts of the Vishwarupa. That's proper. Yeah, Upasana Kanda. Unless you have the Narayana Shila, you cannot do your worship of the demigod. You must have, Narayana must be there. Because he's the one who actually sanctions and gives the benediction. The demigods must ask permission from Narayana, and then they can give benediction. Yes. Shrestha. Any other questions, comments? Pardon me? Shrestha. Shrestha. Yeah. Yad yad acharati shrestha. So the king gives a standard and everyone follows. Okay, so we'll stop here today. All glories to Shiva.